your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Morning. We're delighted to welcome with us this morning some students. We have students from, I believe, Ellsworth High School. Would they please stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. And we have students from West Allis High School. Would they please stand? We're delighted to welcome you also. The students are here with us today with a national award-winning program called Caught with Class. Students from all over the state are invited to come and participate in an oral argument, and if they agree to do so, they are sent copies of the brief in the case we're about to hear, and they may do other activities than that in the connection with the case. Then they come to oral argument, and we've been introduced to them, and then after that, after this argument, the students will meet with a justice of this court. And there will be a discussion about the procedures of the court, not the substantive issues that are involved in any of the cases we hear. Everyone is welcome to join the students after this case for that discussion. Now, the students have received material about the case, but we have a synopsis of the case, a summary of the case. And it's easier and more informative to listen to oral argument if you know something about the case. So if anyone would like a summary of the case we're about to hear, just raise your hand and the marshal will give you a summary. Okay. I see that we have a Senator Jauch here today. Thank you for coming. We swore you in yesterday, so we know you're okay today. And we're delighted. Is there any other legislator who was present that we should introduce? Well, thank you for coming and your interest in the judicial branch, Senator. Before I do that, I have to introduce the court to you all. I'm going to start on my far left with Justice Lewis Butler. Seated next to him is Justice David Prosser. To my immediate left is Justice Anne Walsh Bradley. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate right is Justice John Wilcox. To his right is Justice Patrick Crooks. And Justice Crooks is the justice with whom the students and others will meet after this case. And on the far right is Justice Patience Rogensack. With those introductions made, I will now call 2005 AP 1689 FAS versus Town of Bass Lake and others. Now, we have several speakers today, so let me run down the lineup so we all are in agreement. 20 minutes to Attorney Tom Harnish, who represents the Town of Bass Lake. 15 minutes for Diane Milligan, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state of Wisconsin as intervener. 15 minutes to Clifford E. Stoner, attorney representing FAS. And 5 minutes to Paul Kent, who will speak on behalf of the Amicus Curiae Wisconsin Builders Association. And then 5 minute rebuttal by Mr. Harnish. Is that the agreed-upon lineup? Okay. We'll start with you, Mr. Harnish.
Chief Justice Abramson, members of the court, Attorney Tom Harnish, here representing the Town of Bass Lake, Sawyer County, the respondent appellate petitioner. What is the town of Bass Lake before this court for? It's a request to confirm the decision of the Sawyer County Board of Appeals, in which that body established that the parcel that had been submitted to Sawyer County did not meet the ordinance requirements, specifically did not meet the minimum lakeshore requirement frontage of 100 feet. What are the legal issues that the town of Bass Lake wants to bring before this court today? There are two. The first issue is that Bass Lake claims the Board of Appeals properly determined that a navigable stream legally bisected a parcel into two lots, and therefore those two lots did not together meet or individually meet the 100-foot county lake frontage requirement. The second issue before this court is a simple matter of construction of the county ordinance. That is, whether the terms front lot, lots, when they are properly interpreted, do they in fact also mean that the FAS LLC, the submitter of the plat, did not conform with the county zoning ordinance. A little bit of history would hopefully aid the court. FAS LLC submitted property and owned property in the town of Bass Lake on the Lakota Ray. It proceeded to divide parcels, and one of those parcels is a parcel called a condominium plat. This plat is on a shoreline adjacent to Lakota Ray. It is also adjacent to a navigable river called Johnson Creek, or Crick, whichever you prefer. Johnson Creek, or Crick, was determined by the Zoning Committee and later confirmed by the Board of Appeals to be a navigable and perennial stream. Johnson Creek bisects the waterfront into the Lake Lakota Ray at a width in which the river runs approximately 7 feet. With that bisection of that condominium plot, the two parcels end up, one being 80 feet, the other being 16 feet, neither of which meet the 100-foot requirement.
Attorney Harnish, I want to just ask, and I have a copy here of the survey. I note that if one takes your argument, then there actually would be three parcels created by the Crick. This is on the, this would be on the west side, would be on the east side. Looking at this, this Crick meanders in and out of the lot line. So when you say it's divided, it makes a division and you're creating separate parcels. Actually, that is creating four separate parcels. That's in addition to the surveyed parcel. I know you're referring to it, but I'm just counting 1, 2, 3, 4 times this went outside of the survey line. In other words, it's back in and out. It meanders along the edge of the lot, and then, as you said, comes out about, if you approximately 6 feet from the shoreline, then you add that with the 7 feet, and you get, or the 9 feet, and then you add 7, you get the 16. Are you meaning to say that these are then separate parcels also?
Justice Wilcox, what I'm meaning to say is that that parcel that you have both below you, the end of the meander, was also owned by FAS LLC. The parcel that they submitted as part of the condominium plat is a parcel, as I expressed here, at 16 feet, so that the other parcels that are not before this court may well have caught a meander, but we don't believe they're relevant to this issue. Let me proceed now to what I think are the issues before this court. We're dealing with a construction of three statutes specifically, 236.01, 236.45, and 236.02, parent 12, formerly known as parent 8. This is a construction of that term, lot area. For this court, this is an environmental protection and a consumer protection case regarding the division of these lots into parcels. What is, in fact, a lot area? Does it include the public use areas upon such division? The public use areas obviously being the navigable stream. I don't have to advise this court as to the riparian right issues. This court has had numerous riparian right issues before it. I would, however, note to the court that this particular case relates back to an attorney general's opinion of 1977, and from there it carries from that opinion a case that goes back to 1874, a case called Weyraut. I found that a case particularly interesting because it talked about the division of a homestead for homestead purposes, and it excluded certain areas. And it said for that acreage that there was no right to cultivate, no right to appropriate, no right to possess, and no right to occupy. And as you carry these cases forward, there's a case that I've noted in my brief called International Paper versus Fond du Lac, which I think is also helpful in the sense that it, again, in this case, talks about a roadway, not about a homestead area. But it says there's certain land that's not useful to the private. Certain land's not useful. That's a public roadway. Well, the subject of this particular matter before this court is the matter of the waterway that may or may not be useful for the private sector. But because it's a navigable waterway, in this case a stream, it bisects the property. It turns that property into now a property that is not fully integrated. In fact, the property is, one could argue, that particular block of water going through there, that that's the non-useful property for the private landowner.
The public has the right to use the water.
Pardon?
The public has the right to use the water under the public trust doctrine, the water, the mouth, or the stream itself, because it's navigable. The ownership, in other words, if it's non-meandered, this is a stream that the taxation, the person is taxed on the land that is underneath the stream, so here it's contiguous. In other words, it's the same owner. Where does that, does this in any way interfere with the public use of the water?
No, Justice Wilcox, there's no interference here with the public's use of the water. What we have here is that whether it be a roadway or whether it be a navigable stream.
But see, it's different when it's a roadway, isn't it? I mean, I don't want to get into semantics.
Well, I've struggled with that issue, yeah. And I thought maybe the court would ask me, and so I think I have an answer. There's very, very, very little difference between a public right-of-way roadway bisecting land than a public navigable river bisecting land. I struggled to find a difference. Maybe I found one difference, but it's rather esoteric. For the 90%, as far as I'm concerned, they are the same.
Well, one, usually the public highway stays where it is. Maybe widened, but it stays where it is. Whereas a river can change.
I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. The river is less controlled by man than is a public highway. Public highway is a right-of-way, and it generally stays where it is. Otherwise, you got restart, condemnation, etc. A river's course can change.
Justice Abramson, I'm as someone who works with local towns on a daily basis, I can tell you that roads do change, and there are some court cases that allow for a little bit of change as
sure.
town officials move the roads by accident or on purpose. But the fact is that you are right. Some of these streams will meander, and so in some cases will a town road meander.
So you don't view that as a difference. You don't view that as a difference. They both meander.
I don't see them as significant differences.
Well, Council, if I can follow up on the Chief's question, because you're arguing the construction of the Sawyer County Ordinance. And when I look at the Sawyer County Ordinance, specifically sub 37, which defines lot area of lot, the contiguous, not separated by public roadway of a lot between its front, rear, and side lot lines, lot area must meet the minimum lot area requirements of Section 18.2. Now, it specifically singles out public roadway. Unless I'm missing it, I don't see anything that specifically singles out the creek riverbed.
Justice Butler, I would point out to you, and I would have laid out to you further on, that there are a number of sections in there that specifically exclude waterways throughout the ordinance. That particular one you pointed out is one where they only include a roadway. There's other provisions that exclude, and I guess I have them listed here in my brief, that exclude waterways. There are some cases, obviously, where they exclude both. The purpose of this chapter that we're dealing with here in 236 for the court, obviously, is a consumer protection section. It deals with drawing up and dividing land into less than 1.5 acre parcels to prevent overcrowding, to avoid creating useless land, to facilitate public requirements, including septic systems, whatever, and to allow the public to ingress and egress on the water and on the roadways where these particular lots are laid out. Now, to construct 236.02 parent 12 to not exclude water or property would not meet these purposes. It would not provide the consumer protection required under 236. And I lay that out for you because if you look at these parcels of an acre and a half, if two-thirds of that acre and a half were water, or two-thirds of that acre and a half were a roadway, the public would still be getting an acre and a half when they bought the land, that private individual had bought the land, but they would be getting two-thirds that the public could enjoy. What they'd be enjoying and would be only an appropriation to one-third of that.
Well, Counsel, what about opposing counsel's argument in their brief, and I believe it starts on page 17, that under Wisconsin law, ownership, and I'll just read from the brief, provides that the owner of a riverbank owns the riverbed to the center thereof subject to the public trust doctrine. In other words, a qualified ownership. We've got a number of cases that indicate that's our law here in Wisconsin. How does that impact in this case?
Well, the qualified title test, which is what we're dealing with here, for a river as opposed to a lake, is still not obviously that of a fee simple. They don't own all of those bundle of rights, as the law professors would like to tell us about. So some of that bundle lies with the public, and it is that which you can't cultivate, you can't appropriate, you can't use in some way, because the public has that. And, of course, that's why there is this division. That's why these lots can't be functionally integrated, because the public can walk right down the middle of your lot, if you will.
Counselor, you know, if I buy your argument, don't I also have to conclude that under 40, 4.49 of the ordinance sub 1, which requires a 75-foot setback from the high water mark, then you can't include that area as part of the land that you owned either. And I don't really think there's ever been a case that has said you have to deduct all of that frontage, even though you can't build on it. Once in a while, in fact, you get a variance and you do end up building on it. So, you know, if I take your argument to its logical conclusion and say, well, yeah, you know, this public frontage on the lot is because it's a navigable lake, and so that, too, has the public's interest. But we never have deducted that from the size of someone's lot. How do I fit those two concepts together?
Justice Rogenczak, you will see in those ordinances setbacks from roadways, setbacks from waterways. We do that as a matter of zoning, okay?
Right.
And if someone has a parcel of land and creates, self-creates, it might add in some cases, a parcel of land in which between the setbacks and between the fact that you can't go on the water itself, you create a, if you will, a relatively useless piece of property, commonly referred to in the parlance as an outlot, that happens. That happens. Land.
It may happen, Counselor, and I don't disagree with that. My concern was, though, is your premise that we can't consider the area that's under the river as part of the frontage of this lot. Well, if we can't consider that area because it's subject to a public interest, then how can we consider the area that borders on the lake itself, which, too, is subject to a public interest? In other words, your argument, I think, is going to prove too much. You're going to say none of this area along the lake, then, is subject to any ownership interest if this area of the riverbed is not subject to an ownership interest.
Well, it may well be that the public has two rights, a right on the navigable river and a right because of the construction of the zoning for a setback, maybe two. And in some cases, that may be a hardship to a landowner. It's obviously there for a purpose. The purpose, obviously, is to protect the waterways of the state. In some cases, the state does that. In some cases, the county does that.
Is there a question you mentioned about environmental and consumer? Is your argument partly that this will be detrimental to the environment to allow the construction here? In other words, there is a difference between a meandered lake, which the public has a trust to go on the water. This is a stream under which, even though it's public trust, that the owner owns the bottom of the stream. So there is a difference between that. You said lakes and streams, but there is a difference between the two. And I was just asking, when I look at this drawing, you've got this 16 feet, and you say, well, but that would be, the public would have the right to walk along the edge of La Couderay, and they'd also have the right to launch, if one could, in a 3-foot stream, it's now whatever floats a canoe, or most likely it wouldn't qualify because it would touch the banks on both sides, and that's a violation under the law. So you could literally walk carefully on tiptoe up the stream, perhaps, for the public to use. But I'm just talking about from an environmental standpoint, what would be the sense of not including that?
Well, environmentally, obviously, as we establish smaller lots and we allow these lots to be eaten up, if you will, when there can be an acre and a half or less, and they're eaten up by a waterway or eaten up by a roadway, you end up in a situation in which you will be cramming and overcrowding, pushing into septic systems, whatever, that may come to the reason we have these subdivision laws and the reason we have this zoning, of course, in part is to protect the consumer and also to protect the environment. When we start allowing the waterway contrary to the position taken by the Attorney General's opinion in 77 and contrary to the position of the town of Bass Lake, we will be in a position where we think both the consumer and the environment will be harmed. I see my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Harnish. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Ms. Milligan. State's position, I gather, is I'll make your appearance first.
May it please the Court, my name is Diane Milligan. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the State of Wisconsin, which intervened in this case at the request of the Department of Natural Resources. The Department of Natural Resources is charged with advising and assisting counties in the administration and the enforcement of shoreland zoning and shoreland land division ordinances. It's also charged with promoting consistency between those ordinances and monitoring the administration and enforcement of those ordinances. The creation of the parcel on which the Bay of Shore Pines plat was created violates the Sawyer County Zoning Ordinance and the Sawyer County Land Division Ordinance. The state's asking the court to make two distinct holdings, one related to zoning and the other to land division. First, we ask that the court affirm the board's determination that Johnson Creek, a navigable waterway, divides the plat parcel into two lots, neither of which meet the minimum lot width or frontage requirements in the Sawyer County Ordinance. Second, we ask that the court remand this matter back to the board so that it may review FAS's land divisions under its subdivision ordinance. And before I address these 2 points, I want to briefly address what this case is not about. The issue is not whether a stream divides an established lot or a non-residential parcel, which appears to be the premise of the builder's brief. Nobody's asking this court to hold that navigable streams and rivers across the state should be property lines that divide all existing parcels. There's no dispute over who owns the bed and banks of navigable waterways. There's no threat to property ownership, land titles, and no threat of imminent chaos. There's no issue regarding how the condominium instrument itself was recorded. Instead, the issue is whether one can create new residential parcels that rely on land on either side of a navigable waterway to meet minimum zoning dimensional requirements.
Counselor, does the stream meander back and forth across the edge of what was originally government lot 4 or across a new division?
Well, as Justice Bradley characterized the record in the previous case, there is a vacuum in this record as well. The court has copies. I believe that there's one copy of a plat showing the government lot. It might have been in the companion case. The town's reply brief presented a deed and a certified survey map that I asked the court to take judicial notice of. These documents show that FAS owned approximately 8 acres between the county highway and the water. And this plat, the condominium plat, is in the middle, so to speak. There's an outlot. Outlot 4, created by FAS, is on the other side of the stream, or that it's through that lot that the stream meanders. So when Justice Wilcox asked previously what's to come of these lots, are we creating separate outlots on the other side, the state's position is the stream itself should have been the dividing line between the condominium plat and what is now outlot 4.
I thought you said that you weren't arguing that the stream is a boundary.
The stream is not a boundary between existing, it doesn't divide existing parcels in two.
Right.
But one cannot create a new parcel that relies on land on the other side of a road or a stream to meet its minimum dimensional requirements, because to do so would be dysfunctional.
Counsel, I do want to ask you, it probably is a preliminary tip, because I think I've got to get it out of the way. I don't know if the rest of the court does. But it would appear that the first two arguments in your brief are issues that were disposed of in the companion appeal that was decided on June 6th. And when I read the brief, and I went back and I read the Court of Appeals opinion in that case, I'm wondering how we can now address these issues if they've already been addressed in a final opinion of the Court of Appeals where review was not sought.
Your Honor, the other case dealt with how to measure frontage on the two-lot CSM, which was yet another land division created by FAS. The issue was, do you measure, I believe, at the ordinary high water mark or somewhere else?
As I understood that, and I'm reading from the Court of Appeals opinion, in some Bass Lake argues that lots 1 and 2 do not comply with lot dimension requirements. The lot dimension requirements was central to that appeal. And as I understand the Crickenberg opinion that was written by the Chief relatively recently, for purposes of claim preclusion, any issues that were or could have been brought should have been brought in that case. So I'm wondering how we can now backdoor it by getting into it in this case if it was part of the other case.
Yes, and it wasn't part of the other case. There was an 8-acre parcel that FAS started with. It divided off a 2-lot certified survey map, and that was the subject of the companion case. In this case, it said that it recorded a condominium plat on the remainder. The remainder includes not only the condominium plat, but this 4-outlot CSM that's in the town's reply brief. What I said in my brief was paralleled what the county zoning administrator had said. It's like there's a problem here. There's a problem that could have been solved had they considered the parcel as a whole and altered the lot lines between those parcels. But that question was not part of the companion case. I understand the town sought to consolidate both appeals at the Court of Appeals level to try to bring this issue together, and the Court of Appeals rejected it. So if claim preclusion requires that an issue actually have been decided, and nobody has decided whether the lots were properly created under the land division ordinance, the Sawyer County Land Division ordinance, and that was the point that I was trying to make.
Counselor, if I look at the maps that were provided to us, one map has the current parcel under consideration, which is where the condominiums are proposed to be placed. And at the side that would be kind of northwesterly, it shows where certified survey map 6445 hooks up with lot 2. So lot 2 kind of sits on top of that, correct?
The 2-lot CSM touches the plat not entirely on both sides of that
but
lot.
But partially.
Yes.
Okay. And so I go back to my first question. As I look at the meandering stream, that line that's there wasn't part of the original, the 6445 certified survey map. It was existing independent of that survey, correct?
It was not included on the survey, correct.
Well, and the lots don't touch that area of the parcel, correct? Okay. So my question again is, isn't that lot, this lot line through which the stream meanders, the original lot line of government lot 4 from the original plat?
No, it's on the other side.
Okay, so the original lot line is not that through which the stream passes.
Correct.
Okay, all right, thank you. I'm still having trouble with the maps, but I'll figure it out. Thank you.
Justice Rogensack, Butler, and Justice Wilcox all asked about what to make of the situation where you own to the center line, you pay taxes to the center line of a stream, of a road, but here we are saying that you shouldn't count the road itself or the stream itself as part of your lot area or your lot width. And one of the FAS's major arguments was the Attorney General's opinion, you know, says this, but nobody's followed that opinion. So the opinion should be ignored. But by the same token, no cases have rejected it. And I've found two cases that use the same logic, that you can't count the stream bed toward your lot area, though you own it. The first case is Jones versus Pettibone, which was cited by the realtors at page 13 of their brief. They cited it for the proposition that you own to the center line of a stream, And this case held that even though a landowner owns title to the thread or the center line of a stream, it's the meander line of the stream that's used to determine the quantity of land that's owned. That's page 7.
Well, that's true, counsel, and you own, actually, if a road goes through you and you own land on both sides, you would own, you know, the land, and you would pay taxes, and the state says that that's a benefit. And here you could say that's a benefit, too, to have, certainly to have a small stream on your land, but the taxation law, we're getting away, but is basically that you would pay for the land under the stream and the same entity would pay it, FAS would pay that. So the only division you're talking about is the encroachment, the impediment or the road or the stream, and you think they ought to be treated the same. I mean,
correct.
Yeah.
The Attorney General's opinion treats roads the same as it treats easements, as it treats streams, saying that these, you can't reach across them to get your minimums. And even though you pay taxes on it, there are values, of course, to owning waterfront property, but it's a dysfunctional lot. It would create a dysfunctional lot if you only had 50 feet on one side and, you know, 40 feet on the other, for example. And in the zoning district at issue here, the residential recreation district, the minimum lot dimensions are 100 feet wide by 200 feet deep. If you had a stream going right down the middle, even if it was a 5-foot stream, even if it was a 3-foot stream,
you could have a 200-foot lot
that you couldn't build a house on.
You could not. Well, I want to ask you this: according to the briefing, there aren't any cases except basically the ones you mentioned and the Attorney General's opinion. This is an area that the legislature has never acted. Do you think that they ought to act in this rather than the court?
Well, I think it would be helpful if the legislature were to act, but I feel that the court can act just like the court in Love Ladies, sure, the most equivalent case, just to say how it is that one measures lot width.
Does it depend on how the ordinance says? Suppose you had an ordinance that says we measure everything lot width, all the way to the middle of the road, in fact, the whole road, the whole creek or part thereof. It's all part of our lot size. Would that be okay for you?
No, and if the county was evaluating land divisions in that manner, the DNR would advise them, or the DOA, the plat review section that follows the Attorney General's opinion, they would say, we don't want you creating dysfunctional lots.
Well, why is it dysfunctional? I mean, you've measured it out now, and it's really big. I mean, I'm looking at a big river. Oh, that lot line goes, lot size is halfway through it. So you can start measuring everything from the middle of the river. You can have a house quite close to the river as a result of that. I mean, would that be acceptable under state law? What I'm trying to do is say, is your argument dependent on what the Sauk County ordinance is?
No, my argument goes broader than what the ordinance says. And I guess my concern is that a bright line rule might be developed that says if you own to the center, if you own both sides, you can create a lot, and that then you could end up with a lot that's totally submerged by water. I own property on the Manitouish River. It's 100 feet wide. Could I create a lot that just had a teeny bit of dry land and all underwater? And if that were created, then I'd be back asking for a variance, and the county would say it's a self-created charge that you created a lot that doesn't work.
Are you saying, okay, counsel, That example, is that a practical example? In other words, you're saying you could create a lot under the water, which would not be buildable, obviously, because you would fall into the wetlands area. So it would not be buildable. So it wouldn't make any difference. You'd have a lot that would be non-conforming. No, strike that. It would not be able to do anything, not even pitch a tent on it.
Well, the time to determine whether or not your lot is functional or buildable or appropriate to be created is when that land is divided. And that's why Sawyer County has a land division review process, and that process was entirely bypassed here. And I'm running low on time, so I wanted to address one argument that I anticipate is going to come up. FAS has argued, and the realtors have argued as well, that it's a condominium. So as a condominium, it's above or it escapes land division review. And the statutes, Chapter 703, says that you can't treat a condominium plat like a subdivision, but they're still subject to land division reviews. And the problem here is that this parcel, this plat, was recorded on a piece of land that was never properly created. And I'm out of time.
Are there any questions for Attorney Milligan? Hearing none, thank you, counsel. We have 15 minutes for Mr. Stoner, representing FAS.
May it please the court, my name is Clifford Stoner, and I represent FAS LLC. FAS LLC is the owner of the original parcel that was purchased by them in May of 2002. And it's also the owner of the two lots that were created by the case that was discussed earlier, CSM 6445. FAS is also the declarant of that condominium that is the subject of this case, Bayshore Pines Condominium. And the sequence of development that the state is critical of was the creation of those two lots by that CSM. And the implication is that that was in some fashion or some way in violation of the state laws or the regulations or the Sawyer County Ordinance. I submit that it was not. The original parcel, as was indicated, was a little over 8 acres, and the two lots then were created, and that left the parcel of close to 8 acres. What was called, I think I misstated those numbers, the original parcel was a lot larger than it. And the remnant lot after the first two lots were created was approximately 8 acres. Of that 8 acres, FAS then declared condominium ownership of what is shown as Bay Shore Pines Condominium and on that plat. And that did include acreage of about 4.43, I think is what it says. And by so doing, they changed the ownership of that portion of the remnant parcel to a condominium form of ownership. And by so doing, that is not in violation of our land division. The statute 703 specifically says that condominium creation by declaration and filing of a condominium plat is not subject to 236. It's not a subdivision under the statute 236. And so what was that remnant parcel? Then of that, the condominium was created. And that condominium then included this frontage that is the discussion that the zoning committee initially said the lot had enough width, and even though it included the creek. The Board of Adjustment then reversed that zoning committee. The circuit court reversed the board's decision, and as did the Court of Appeals. And what was requested in the petition for review was to really determine whether or not state law, as contended by the town of Bass Lake, was as espoused in that Attorney General opinion. Basically, that a lot could not go over or include a creek. And although the town of Bass Lake is referred to it as a river, that term was not in the board's decision. And this is a creek. As Justice Wilcox pointed out, it's about 3 feet wide, and it does zigzag back and forth, and it does empty into a very large lake, La Couderay Lake. And where it empties into that lake, it is about 7 feet wide, 6 or 7 feet wide, depending upon, again, the time of year. But it is subject to varying of its course. It's in substantial wetland area, although it's not designated as wetland, but it's what we would consider certainly not buildable right along that creek. And the creation of that condominium did not constitute a division. It was simply changing the ownership. And the town of Bass Lake then has jumped on that to say, you've created a lot that doesn't conform with the Sawyer County Ordinance and doesn't conform with the state law. Now, if you look at the map that was the plat of the condo, you notice that there's a tremendous amount of distance between the lakefront, La Couderay Lake, and where any buildings were going to be. This is perhaps similar to a lake access lot. There's no buildings going to be there. None were proposed to be built there. And the setbacks for the first 200 feet in depth would obviously not permit a building site. But none was planned there. The only thing that the condominium declaration says is that they're going to have four parcels. I'm sorry, one parcel, four units, and that they may build four garages. And they would be, I think, if you look at the map, it'd be kind of to the north of that the units that's closest to the road. And subsequently, after having declared the condominium ownership of that portion, they did file and record a CSM that reflected some outlots. And that is the only place in the record, the entire record, that shows is in the town's reply brief. But and so it wasn't ever in the record, hasn't been argued before, but I think I need to explain. The part that is to the north was intended to be for those garages. Right next to the two initially created lots of CSM 6445 was those two lots, outlots. And they're not lots now. You can't build on outlots or anything. Those outlots were primarily for purposes of providing enough septic system drainage field for those two lots if necessary. And then that leaves what I think Justice Rogensack was asking about. In the lower right-hand corner of that drawing,
right. That
boundary line definitely was created by the declaration of the condominium.
Okay.
And further south of that, southeast, is property that is still owned by FAS, but it's not part of the condominium.
Thank you.
And
is it buildable?
Beg pardon?
Is it buildable?
No, it would not
be. Outlot.
And it would be, as the CSM indicates, for those outlots, they have to be conveyed, if conveyed, with the adjoining property. They have to be joined to the adjoining property. And the future intent was to go ahead and probably include that with the condominium. But initially, obviously, the intent was to keep the acreage at a minimum for the condominium for tax purposes and development purposes.
Now, it's my understanding, Mr. Stoner, that Sawyer County has changed its ordinance.
They have changed the ordinance insofar as the computation of the lot area.
Right.
And that is true. Since this case, they have now indicated that the lot area computation does not include roadways and navigable water.
So if you were to have come in now with your condo plan, you would not satisfy Sawyer County. Is that right?
I think that is very true, Justice, yes.
What would your argument be to build on the property then? Would you just go home and forget about the condo? Doesn't sound like your clients would.
No.
What would your argument be?
My argument would then be that they ought to try to acquire some additional land. So that they, because that parcel as outlined just doesn't qualify under Sawyer, what would then be the Sawyer County requirements.
Counsel? No, please. Counsel, do you know if other counties in this state, and I know that the counties are advised by DNR regarding their ordinances in these areas, do you know if other counties in this state have an ordinance the same or substantially similar to the new Sawyer County ordinance, which provides that no portion of the bed of a navigable body of water shall be used in determining the minimum lot area or width?
I can't speak, I don't know about some other counties, but I do know that I think it's the adjoining county, Washburn County, did, under their ordinance at this time, permit the bed under a creek to be counted in the area computation for a lot. But other than that, I personally don't know. There is a question that has been raised concerning the Attorney General opinion, and it would seem to me that if there is to be a law in the state that requires the exclusion of the ownership, I mean, the exclusion of the computation of a stream bed, that in computing lot area for zoning purposes, that really should be something done by the legislature, or certainly it's subject to regulation, but there's nothing there now. Wasn't at the time this case first came up. And the statement that there is a front lot issue that was raised by the town of Bass Lake, that front lot definition, there is no such phraseology, front lot, in the Sawyer County Ordinance. It does indicate what direction you're supposed to look at to find where the front of the lot is, but it's front of the lot. Same, and that's more of a directional thing. And it also has the width of the lot. Now, that's a measurement. So it would seem that the front of the lot, in this case, where it faces and has frontage on the large lake La Couderay is the actual front of this lot, and that's where the 100 feet of frontage is required, rather than along the creek.
Counselor, can I interrupt you just a minute? One thing that's concerned me is we keep talking about the definition of the area of a lot. You know, when I was a kid in high school or junior high, I learned that you determine the area by multiplying the length times the width, essentially. Okay? And you get square feet when you have an area. You don't get linear feet. But we're talking always about linear feet. You know, there's so many feet on this side of the creek, and the creek has 7 feet. Those are all linear feet. We're not talking about an area type of measurement. So I'm a little confused on why are we fitting these two things together.
Well, it's my position that the only thing that's really under consideration or ought to be under consideration is the amount of the linear feet of frontage on La Couderay Lake.
Right.
That's it.
But when we talk about it and when opposing counsel talks about it, he says it doesn't meet the area requirements. And my question to you is area is in a square foot measurement because it's length times width, right?
Yes.
So why are we using area when we're talking about linear feet? That's what I'm having some trouble with.
I think the area issue comes up only in connection with the determination of how many units can be built within that condominium parcel.
Right. They each have to have 20,000 square feet,
that's
right?
That's correct.
Okay.
And under the Sawyer County Ordinance, uh-huh. you took the entire area of the condominium
okay.
to determine the number of units. And using their formula could go quite a bit higher than four.
Right,
Nearly eight, I think it was.
Okay.
And so I think that's where area has come into this case, Your Honor.
Okay, so it's nothing to do, the area definition has nothing to do with the linear foot frontage that we're concerned with.
I don't believe it does,
okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
If you're relying on the linear foot frontage, what importance is the width of the creek or river?
I don't think it's important at all because the total, well, no, I shouldn't say it that way. I think the total frontage is what counts. How much of that is creek bed, the mouth of the creek, is only basically to determine what, if any, use can be made of that part that's up close to Couderay. And as I earlier stated, nothing is planned for more than 200 feet back. And so the linear feet along La Couderay Lake is important only for purposes determining whether or not there's a total of 100 feet that's owned by the condominium.
And you need the creek bed for the 100 feet.
Absolutely.
That's why the creek's important, because the creek flows into the lake. And therefore, when you figure your 100 feet on the lake, you have to figure in that creek. Otherwise, you're short. How much are you short?
Hey,
how many feet are you short?
Well, it would be the width of the creek would be six or 7 feet. But
then there's some piece of land beyond the creek. You need that too, don't you?
Beyond, you mean to the right hand?
Well, I don't know about right or left.
Yes.
Looks like down.
On each side of the creek is needed, yes.
Yeah, you need both pieces.
Yes.
You need the creek and the piece beyond the creek.
And
100 feet.
The little segment that the creek pushes off, cuts off from the major parcel.
Got it.
And it's submitted that that should be included, that creek bed should be included because its own, and that is in recognition of a long, long line of cases and law here in Wisconsin as to the ownership of the bed of a creek.
Counselor, can I ask you one more question? I'm still a little bit confused.
Go ahead, Justice Robinson.
The Chief Justice asked you how the Sawyer County had changed its ordinance subsequent to this case passing through, and you said, unless I wrote it wrong, they have now said that you cannot use a creek bed or a road in calculating the area of the parcel.
And then she said to you, well, you would be stuck then if that new ordinance were applied. And I thought you responded in the affirmative. But when we're talking about area, you don't have area problems, do you? So I'm confused. I'm sorry.
Well, may I answer?
Yes, of course.
My statement, they'd have to do something else, is because I was assuming that there would be a ruling thus that there were two lots, and that the lot that, looking at the map to the left-hand side of the creek, would be insufficient.
I gotcha. I gotcha. Okay, thank you very much.
One last question. I asked you about the importance of the width of the navigable body of water. So if you have, say, 103 or 105, 110 linear feet facing the lake, the fact that the creek is 25 feet wide in the middle, it doesn't change anything?
I would think that would be a standard that could be established by ordinance that, you know, only a certain amount of the creek bed could count toward meeting that linear feet requirement along the shoreline. But if in fact you had 100 feet of width of a lot and the middle 25 feet was the creek bed, under present law, I think that lot would comply with the frontage requirement. Whether or not it would comply with setback requirements, particularly from the side, I would be doubtful. But as far as meeting the frontage requirement, I think it would.
Thank you, Council. Attorney Paul Kent, representing the Wisconsin Builders.
May it please the Court, my name is Paul Kent, and I'm here today on behalf of the Wisconsin Builders Association to address the question of whether a stream divides a lot. In the short time that I have before the Court today, I would like to make three brief points. First, there is no basis in Wisconsin law for the proposition that a navigable stream creates a property boundary that divides a lot. Second, a holding that a stream divides a lot will, in fact, impact the title of thousands of properties statewide, and not just lakefront properties. And third, there is no need to redefine property boundaries to achieve legitimate regulatory objectives that we've been hearing about today. Regulation and title are two separate matters. One can regulate the use of land and address all of the land use and environmental protection issues here without affecting property boundaries and title. I think we've established in the discussion that has occurred to date that the case law has been clear for 150 years about the riparian ownership of stream beds to the center of the stream, and when a riparian owns both sides, that ownership goes through both sides of the stream. I believe that the Attorney General's opinion, for reasons set forth in our brief, has an analysis that's not based on case law, but really a faulty analogy between roadways and navigable streams. I think the important point that I would like to address in response to the comments today by the Attorney General is that she made that the issue is not whether a stream divides an established lot. I would submit to this Court that that is precisely the issue that has been put forth in the status of this case. Look at the county's decision. The county's decision, and I'm quoting now from the conclusions of law from the County Board of Appeals, the Board reverses the decision of the Sawyer County Zoning Committee and determines that Johnson Creek divides the lot comprising the Bayshore Pines condominium. Accordingly, the lot does not meet the minimum parcel size requirements contained in the Sawyer County zoning ordinance. Counsel for the town, in his brief, similarly stated, the board lawfully determined that navigable water legally bisected the subject parcel into two lots. So we're not dealing with a situation where we have somebody conditioning the filing of a plat on developing a lot that follows these navigable waters. What we have is the proposition that by law, Wisconsin common law, that a stream bisects a lot. And that is not the law in Wisconsin, and it has never been the law in Wisconsin. So we can talk about, you know, how this might work if we have a situation where you're conditioning a plat. We don't have that. What we have is a zoning decision where, faced with a question of do you meet the minimum lot size, what the board said was, no, you don't, because the stream legally bisects your lot into two parcels. And that
didn't change the ownership.
It didn't change the ownership, but it changed the lot line of that parcel.
I understand. But it doesn't affect ownership necessarily.
Not necessarily, but it would affect the property boundary.
Right.
It seems to me maybe the issue is a little different, and let me see if I can focus on a hypothetical. If the law in Wisconsin is that the owner of the land abutting a navigable waterway owns title to the center of the waterway, then I could arguably, if I owned only 16 feet, and I'm using that number, of course, because the parcels that we have here are 16 feet, or the land, 16 feet, 7 feet, mouth of the creek, 80 feet. That's how you get to your 103. If I owned land that was only 16 feet, and then, as I'm looking at this map, to the right, there's a really big river. And the center mark gives me 87 feet. Then do I have sufficient frontage to meet the requirement? I'd have 103 feet. If I can include my 87 feet of waterbed.
Justice Riley, I think that question illustrates precisely the point that I am trying to make between the difference between title and regulation of that property. From a title standpoint, you still have one lot. That lot may be 16 feet of land and 87 feet of water, but it's one lot. And the fact that it's water doesn't change that lot. But for the question of whether you can meet setback requirements, frontage requirements, minimum lot size, that depends upon what the county ordinance says. And if the county ordinance now said, okay, for determining minimum area of lots, we're not going to count the stream bed, that's a perfectly rational thing for the county to decide to do. That doesn't mean there's two lots. It means you have one lot, and in calculating for a regulatory purpose how much you want, where you can build, they can do that. You can get to all of those kinds of environmental and land use objections through regulating the lot, regulating the setback, deciding what you're going to include or not include in the setback or the frontage or whatever. You don't have to upset 150 years of common law and say all of a sudden now you have two separate lots. I think that's the problem that following the Attorney General's opinion leads you down the road. I think Justice Wilcox correctly pointed out, even in this case, we would have three more or four more outlots. We have in this state 84,000 stream miles. How many meandering impacts is this going to have on existing lots if what we say is every time a stream moves through a parcel, it legally bisects the lot into two lots? I think that would create confusion and chaos, and it's why we're here today. But I think all of those concerns about whether it's septic or setback or buildable lot size or all of those things can be done by regulation. And while we're not here to evaluate the ordinance as amended, I think that's the direction to go to address those environmental issues.
So if we so interpret the ordinance now, you don't really object to that as the Builders Association?
Well, we don't have the current ordinance before us, and the question's about...
If the present ordinance was interpreted, oh, it didn't really make two lots, just this one lot doesn't satisfy the frontage requirement or the area requirement, or however you want to phrase it?
I think that presents, I mean, that question isn't before us, but that presents a very different question. Then you have questions about, is the ordinance, you know, reasonable and appropriate regulation? Is it, you know, is there a public purpose? All the rest of those kinds of arguments, which we don't have. But that kind of approach, which is to say a regulatory approach, what we have right now, some counties go for 100, you know, minimum size of 10,000 square feet, or some will say 20,000. Some say you want a minimum lot size of 100 feet or 200 feet. Those are all regulatory choices that a county can make. Whether a particular regulatory choice would be something that's appropriate would be for us to decide on that case.
If I may,
Justice Bradley.
In reading the Court of Appeals opinion, I thought that maybe a portion of it was unfair, and I want you to respond. And that is, that portion of the opinion which characterized the board, that says, the board erred as a matter of law when it concluded that the Attorney General opinion was binding state law. And when I read the board's decision, it says, first, FAS contends that the Attorney General's opinion constitutes persuasive authority, not the law, while we agree. And so it seems to me that they agreed with that, but then went on to say that FAS has cited no case law which convinces the Board of Appeals that the Attorney General's opinion should not apply and should not be followed. So it just seems that maybe the Court of Appeals, in my mind, wasn't correctly characterizing what the Board did when it said we agree that the Attorney General opinion is persuasive authority, not the law. Can you respond to that?
I'm not completely sure I understand your question, but let me respond this way. I think it's fair to say that the Attorney General's opinion is not binding authority.
That's right. Absolutely.
And in this particular case, you know, it's not been adopted by statute or rule or, for that matter, case law. I think the question is, did the town board rely exclusively on that or not?
I don't know if that's the question. I mean, it may be.
Okay.
I mean, it seems to me that the Court of Appeals said, in its opinion, that the board, and I'm looking at the slip opinion, page 5, the board erred as a matter of law when it concluded the Attorney General's opinion was binding state law. And the way that I read the board's opinion, it says, okay, we agree that it's not binding, but it's persuasive. Nothing else is offered, so we're going to apply it and follow it.
I guess I would respond this way. Whether they were relying on the Attorney General's opinion or their own view of the law or, for that matter, public policy, I think the result is what they concluded is, as a matter of law, a stream divides a lot. And what I would submit is that that is not the law in Wisconsin. Thank you.
Mr. Kent. We'll have Mr. Harnish for 5 minutes of rebuttal. Mr. Harnish.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me address a few of the matters that have come before this Court. First of all, let's understand, of course, that the condominium plat must still comply with the zoning ordinance. So we're before us here is the violation of the zoning ordinance. Second, Justice Bradley pointed out the was getting to the absurd results. And, of course, that's exactly what we have here if we allow for waterways and roadways to be included in lottage. The case that was often cited to you here was the so-called Town of Campbell case on annexation. And when one looks at the Town of Campbell and Black River and La Crosse, and you take that 600-foot run from La Crosse over to French Island, if you can now take part of that parcel over on French Island, which is now La Crosse by annexation, and take the other part on the other side and piece them together to make a lot, that is, in our opinion, an absurd result. And that is, of course, exactly why we're here today, because that's what leads to, if you allow for waterways, and roadways to be included in the lottage. One of the other things noted
here is... You can let the waterway be included as part of the lot, but not for purposes of lake frontage or not for purposes of qualifying. I mean, you don't have to divide it into two lots.
Well, on the zoning question, I think the law is clear. Throughout the state, in the zoning law in 59692 and in the NR115 and in the county ordinances, they exclude the waterways. The waterways are excluded. So we're not talking a zoning issue. We're talking simply a land division, subdivision issue. And it is here that we say...
Let me just get it straight. You are not... Are you advocating that land division, that it is a land division? That's what the argument is, I think. That you're, all the other regulatory things we have no... I mean, I don't have any issue with. You can't build within 100 feet or 75 feet of a stream or what waterway or whatever. But here, we're talking about land division, division of land, property. And I thought your argument was that the stream divides it as land division.
That stream divides the land is what the position taken in the Attorney General's opinion in 77. It is the interpreting 236.02 parent then 8, now 12. And whether you want to consider the condominium division as not part of a land division, that, I guess, is something this Court can certainly ponder. I'm not here to deal with that. I'm here to say that for our purposes, that land was divided. It's also made question about a creek as opposed to a stream, as opposed to a river. I think the Court can take a look at all the cases that go back 50, 100 years. There's references to navigable creeks as opposed to an old drainage run or a creek. This is a navigable waterway. It is a navigable stream perennial. That's what it was declared. Now, the question of the lot frontage is an interesting one because there's a little bit of an English teacher in me, but if you look at the definition of the front lot, it's front, comma, lot. Okay? I think that's pretty clear what the ordinance meant. It is a front lot, and when you're looking at it for purposes of reviewing it and analyzing it, you exclude the waterway. Let me end by suggesting that we are affecting land here. And when land is divided, that is what we're talking about. We are not talking about land that is just sitting there where a creek is running through it. When someone decides to subdivide land, it is there when the issue of the public's rights in these issues comes to play. This has been the Attorney General's opinion bench since 1977, 29 years. The legislature has reviewed this statute 12 times and never once struck on that issue. I think that's pretty powerful evidence that they believe the Attorney General's opinion is, in fact, a proper interpretation of the law. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. I want to, on behalf of the court, thank all the counsel, you, Mr. Hernisch, you, Ms. Milligan, Mr. Stoner, and Mr. Kemp, for their arguments today on yet another regulatory or otherwise land issue. That will close our hearing, but before that, I've neglected to introduce someone that's important to the court. Is Barbara Raggetts here? It's good meeting you. She is our marshal's sister, and I hope you keep the marshal in better line than we do. That ends 2005 AP 1689 FAS versus the town of Bass Lake. The students remain. Justice Crooks will be out shortly to talk with them. Everybody else is welcome to take part. We are back at 1:30.